Hey gang, if you're in Austin, you're looking for some live music in the live music capital of the world, why not check out 2014-2015 Austin Chronicle Music Poll winner for best club to play, best sounding venue, and best venue. That's Strange Brew Lounge Side. Simply go to strangebrewlounge.com, look on their calendar, and find out what's going on. From the Glenn Miller Orchestra to Jimmy Dale Gilmore, from Renfro to today's guest, Ray Prim, they're all playing there. Go to Strange Brew Lounge Side for yourself and find out what Austin's best venue has to offer. That's strangebrewlounge.com. Now let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. Ray Prim is making his second appearance on the show. He was on here about 3 years ago in 2012. We had a great conversation then, and we have a great conversation now as he is just putting out an album this week called Still Here on Loungeside Records, and he has a release party, if you're in Austin, at Strange Brew Loungeside this Saturday, May 16th at 9 p.m. He'll be doing a great show. Amy Cook opens the show, one of my favorite artists as well. Anyway, you guys might know Ray from the Soul Riders series that he did at Strange Brew. And Ray's been really, really kicking ass, man. He did this record Still Here on his own. Over the last couple years, he's learned how to use Pro Tools. He's learned how to use plugins. He's learned how to record different instruments. And he did a fantastic job. I asked him who did the record when he got here. And he told me it was him. And it blew my mind. Not that I didn't expect that from Ray. But I didn't know that his engineering chops, what he had been doing by woodshedding the last few years, really, really learning recording. And songwriting. I mean, he's been in a songwriting group where he writes a song every week, and he did that for a year. And he's got tons of songs on here. We talk about that. He's got a song on the new record called Off My DZ, which he thought was kind of a throwaway from that, which is what happens when you write a lot of songs. You write so many that you can't really tell what the gems are at one point. And then when you do discover that some are gems, it's exciting. And this song, Off My DZ, is a fun song, and he wrote it just off the cuff. Last minute for the songwriting game, like in the last hour or whatever, and turned it in, and it turns out it's a great song. Anyway, all the songs are great on this record. Ray's a great artist. You can find him at rayprim.com. It's great, man. It's just, you know, he's doing it for the love of it, too. You know, I mean, the guy works a job, and even when he came in here that day, when we did this conversation a couple weeks ago, he was leaving immediately to go do a show at Whippin' with a friend of his. I mean, he's out there playing all the time. He's making his records. He's doing everything he can to be out there, and he's really grown as a songwriter. So my hat's off to Ray. You're doing it in a DIY fashion, and you're succeeding because you're getting it done. I hope this record opens some doors for you, my friend. Ray Prim. All right, we will be talking to him in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, May 13th, I will be playing at the Hole in the Wall from 7 to 8 p.m. I'll be following my friend Ethan Azarian and my other friend Jeff Johnston as they will be playing from 6 to 7. Then I'll play 7 to 8. No cover. Come on out if you live in Austin. It'll be a fun show. I haven't been doing a lot of solo shows this year, but this one promises to be very fun. Okay, I got some Skyrocket shows this week. We're playing Thursday at Steiner Ranch. We are playing at Deutschenfest on Friday in Pflugerville. If you go to that thing, it's a fun thing. There's a lot of rides and all kinds of carnival, all kinds of funnel cake kind of thing. It's always fun to be playing like a county fair thing. I think it is a county fair. They just call it Deutschenfest. Is that right? I don't know. Someone tweet at me. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Other than that, I had a great weekend. I played with Skyrocket, you know, Thursday at the Moody Theater where they filmed the Austin City Limit show. That was a great show. It was a corporate party, but the audience was primed, man. It was all kinds of music. Gina Chavez played, Elizabeth McQueen played, Brennan Lee and Noel McKay played, all people that had been on the show. It was fun to see them out there. Then Friday, we went to Houston and played a party out at a country club. And then Saturday came back and played at the Paramount 100th anniversary party. That was a fun time. I got to meet my girlfriend Zuri's mom that night. We went to dinner before the show. Then we went there and played in a tent in the middle of a closed down Congress Avenue. Good times. Good, good times. All right, I'm going to get to playing some piano and practice some songs for my show tomorrow at the Hole in the Wall. So everyone, come on out. At the Hole in the Wall, tomorrow night, 7 to 8, I'll be there. And if you want to see Ray Prim, he will be at Strange Brew Loungeside this Saturday, May 16th, celebrating the release of his album, still here on Loungeside Records, all right? So let's get to our conversation with Ray Prim. The return of Ray Prim. Here he is. Let's get down. I was going to ask you, because Tate was in your was in Seven Stones.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Have you guys done a reunion? Are you guys like the last holdout band? Or?
No, you know what? We actually did, the last time we did one at One to One Bar, and we were supposed to do it that night, but there was so much for Tate to learn with the Sunflower thing.
Yeah.
So we're like, man, we're not going to make you do all that. You know, and he said he couldn't do it. So that's when I stepped in and did it with my band. But we've done one. I think we did one like maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
How is it when you do it? Like,
man, it's like riding a bicycle. I told Tate we only have to learn 9 songs, and we always think it's gonna be a big deal.
Was it?
Because we would have only done 45-minute set, and our songs, like back then, we didn't know any structure. It was like 6-minute rock opera songs, you know. So we would have had like maybe to learn 7 songs, 8 songs, but it wouldn't have been hard. But he had so much Sunflower to relearn. He hadn't done a Sunflower reunion show since, damn, I don't know, back when Momo's, like maybe 6-7 years ago.
Jesus.
And then I opened up for them too then as well. So at Momo's, oh shoot.
That's all right.
So I opened up for Momo's as well, so.
Were you, explain to me, because I know you, well, you were on the show at the very beginning of the show, and we went through your whole life.
Yeah.
And, but in that scene, where did Seven Stones fit in?
We didn't really.
Because I remember when you guys came around, I was kind of.
Well, you and Gowdy, we used to go see you a lot. I used to go see you when you had your band, I think it was at Steamboat. I think you were called just Gowdy then.
Right. We didn't play there very much, though, then.
Yeah,
I think... We stayed a little, like, we just wrote songs.
Then you, what was the band that you played with? And you had...
It was Gowdy. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to go see y'all there. We didn't play that much. We started out at the Black Cat, and we were a little bit harder, like a little bit heavier.
Yeah.
So we did Black Cat, we played Back Room, like stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember doing a show with you guys at Dessau Music Hall. Isn't that weird?
It was Dessau Music Hall.
Yep. It was Seven Stones and Gowdy. Yep. Because I remember at the time you guys had recorded with Mike McCarthy.
Mike McCarthy. Who was that?
He's a guy. He ran the studio at Hamstein.
On Congress? It was the Congress House?
No. No, it was way out there. I remember because you guys had that song. And I can't remember if I helped or if I assisted him while he mixed one of your songs. And then we did a show together like a couple weeks later at Dessau Music Hall.
Dessau Music Hall. Man, I cannot remember that. I thought we played with you at, maybe my mind is just boggling. Cause I thought we played with you at Steamboat.
Probably.
We opened
probably
up for y'all at
the
Steamboat.
Reason why I remember it though is because I had a flyer in in my studio for a long time.
Oh damn.
Yeah.
That's just my mind. I just forgot about that.
Yeah.
Huh. Was it our last lineup? Was it the lineup with Tate in it?
Yeah. I remember hanging out with Tate. I remember hanging out and talking to you.
Wow. I remember that.
Yeah.
I do remember playing with y'all at what you call it. We probably, because I remember we used to go see you play, and we looked up to you, and it was another band. Another rock band.
Thanks, by the way.
Yes, man. We used to try to, because I also used to live above Steamboat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I would be able to just walk. Like, I could hear the bands that I wanted to see and stuff like that. Yeah. And I'm trying
to hear the bands you didn't want to see, too.
Yeah. Oh, and Billy White.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Billy White. Yeah. So I made that happen. I was like, I begged to play with y'all, and I begged to play with Billy White. And I lucked out and got a chance to play with Billy White and Morphine.
Oh, yeah.
And I got they put us between them, so we could say Morphine opened up for us.
Wow.
They didn't really open up for us. And then Billy White played behind us.
I might have been there, because I remember hanging out with Mark Sandman there.
Yeah, it was on a Thursday night. It was on a Thursday night. Yeah.
Was it a gig that they just picked up?
Well,
out of the blue, or?
Well, I think they wanted because back then we had a little bit of a crowd, and so Billy, you know, for some reason, I don't know.
Billy didn't have a
crowd.
No. Neither did we. I was like, why would you want to open for both of us?
Because you had a Friday night. I loved y'all. And Morphine, they knew Morphine was going to have a crowd for them early.
Yeah.
But Morphine wanted to play the earliest slots.
Right.
And then they wanted to keep the crowd kind of going.
So they
put us in the middle, yeah. And then Billy headlined. Because I'm like, first they want us to headline. So I'm not headlining over Billy. Hell no. There's no way. And me being who I didn't know much about Morphine. I didn't know who Morphine was. Yeah. So I didn't know nothing about that. I was like, okay, I'll go in between it. But I'm not going behind Billy White because I used to go down and see him every Tuesday?
Yeah,
every Tuesday. You know what I'm saying? I just walked down the stairs and just, man, that man blew me away.
Yeah.
So there's no way. And it was a Thursday night. I remember. It was a Thursday night that we got a chance to do that.
I remember seeing you. You've always been a really great talent. I don't remember a lot of songs. I remember the one song that Mike was working on had Lights, Tripping.
Bright Lights. Yeah, Bright Lights. That's Blue Chemicals.
Okay, Blue Chemicals. Yeah, I remember that song.
No, that's called Breathe Again.
So I probably heard that song. Yeah. I probably heard that song 140 times that day.
Well, you know who remixed that album then? I guess it was Wilson.
Jim Wilson?
Jim Wilson. He mixed that album.
Huh.
Jim Wilson mixed that album. Now, I don't know who else he might have been working with somebody else, but Jim Wilson recorded Blue Chemicals.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you just told me outside that your new album, what day does it actually come out?
It's going to come out May 16th. So it's not, I'm not doing the whole store Tuesday. Release thing, but okay. It's going to come out.
So Saturday, May 16th, the day of the release show at
Strange Brew.
At Strange Brew at 9 p.m. Saturday, May 16th.
And we're on Lounge Side Records.
On what?
On Lounge Side Records.
Oh, you're on their label?
Yeah, they're the ones who put it out.
What in the zippity doo-dah? Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have had any money I spent all my money trying to make the CD, so I wouldn't have had any money to like duplicate it. So Scott stepped in, and we're on their label. So that's pretty much where
it makes you feel good. That's the best club in Austin.
Oh, it makes me feel real good. I mean, how it happened is he wanted us to do a live CD, right? And we recorded the CD live, and it just wasn't the way they tried to record it. It didn't capture the room. It was all off the board.
Yeah,
you know, and that's not the magic.
That's the fine thing. That's the fine thing, you know? Between live and yeah, live it's recordings like, that suck.
There's
and,
no magic. If the what makes Strange Brew so special is the room. And so there was no room. So I said, I can't work with it. It's like, I just don't like that, the way that sounds, guitar, acoustic, you know, it's not working. So I kind of, we didn't do it. And then I'd been working on this album and and I talked to him and I noticed that, what's his name? John Nielsen was putting out an album. And I was like, this isn't a live album, but it's on Lounge Side Records. So I went back and approached him. I was like, hey, are you guys putting out albums that aren't just live now? And he was like, yeah. I was like, hey, man, I've been working on this album, this thing for a while now. What do you think about help putting it out with us? And he's like, for sure. I was like, thank the Lord, because I'm broke. I got no money.
Wouldn't it be awesome if all record deals were that easy to get? Like, hey, I made this album. I don't really have the money to put it out. You think you have it? Yeah, sure.
Well, so cool. He did that. He agreed to it and hadn't even heard it.
Yeah.
He just went with my word. I just told him. I was like, you know, it's an EP. You know,
I mean, you're a great songwriter. What I was going to say was, Still Here, I've just listened to it like 3 times in a row.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, you are a great songwriter. And I remember when we did Songwriter in the Round a couple years ago.
Yeah, my baby got destroyed. Flipnautics.
Took away Flipnautics, didn't they?
Yeah, that was my, God, I love doing that. And I can't find another place to do it that will give me consistent, you know, well, because it takes a...
Not even your labels...
they have residencies there. No, I know. You know, so it's hard to do that. So they have residencies. But man, Flipnautics, they were so perfect because they would give me... I would treat it like a TV show.
Yeah,
I didn't want to do it in the summer. I didn't want to do it in the summer because, you know, Flipnautics is too hot. So every September through February, she let me have every Friday. Whether it was Matt the Electrician would let me do it or... I forget the young lady's name now. There were 3 people that took over, but we kept, because we were bringing the numbers, they would just, you know, tell that next person, hey.
Oh, yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah. It's a great night, man. It's not hard to, once you get three people that, that, you know, have a good little reputation and got good music, got a little following.
Yeah.
Even if they bring 10 people each, it's 30 people.
That's the coolest thing about Flipnotics.
Yeah. So you have an intimate show. It was never a bad show. I think the most popular, the most crowded one we had, and it got very uncomfortable in there, is when I did it with Susanna Schofield and Casey Crowley. That was so hot up in there. And then when I did it with Patrice Pike, and it was me, Patrice, and somebody else. And it was just, and it's because of Susanna, because of Patrice, but they had too much of a following. It was like, we couldn't breathe in there. It's like, you know,
those are fun though.
Yeah. It was for us, but I could see people out there just like,
yeah.
And the chairs weren't comfortable and they were sitting all on the floor in front of us. And I was like, man, but I wanted to do it at Cactus Cafe, but that's one of the hardest places to get in. So I don't know where I'm going to do it. I want to do another Soul Riders and Around somewhere, but to get that intimate thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've been.
It's tough because one-to-one is a great room.
It's a great room.
But for that you can't, it's a difficult to achieve that sort of intimacy there.
I mean, we do a thing called Make It Do What It Do Mondays, where I do a swung song swap once a month.
Yeah.
But it's just not the same. I'm on this big stage and then the next person is like about to your wall. And it's like, you know, it's not the same feeling. As Flipnotics, it felt like we were in a living room.
Yeah. And the Cactus is, really, Flipnotics is you're in a living room. Somewhere, that's somebody's house at some point. And that was the living room.
Exactly. So
let's talk about Still Here, man.
Okay.
So this is the album that comes out May 16th. You're going to put it on iTunes and you're going to put it on the...
I don't know if I'm going to put it up on iTunes. Really? I'm going to probably put it... Well, you know, I go through CD Baby, so they'll probably do it. What I do is I put it on Bandcamp for sure, and I put it on CD Baby for sure.
Okay,
and they'll probably put it on iTunes. I've never gone straight through.
Okay.
iTunes, but I guess they do.
You're not like boycotting iTunes.
No. I don't want to
put my record on the most popular platform.
No. I don't know how to do that.
Right.
So I'm
guessing
CD Baby does that for me.
Okay.
Right. I guess because when I looked the other day, I looked it up.
They do a whole thing. And okay, about what do you believe? Do you believe in Spotify and Pandora?
You know,
do you even
I'm
care?
Not. I'm not. I actually joined up with Pandora because I like the fact that Pandora they can't rewind and listen to it as many times as they want. It's just like a station. Spotify, I don't know, man. Like that kind of. I mean, I don't make enough money anyway, so it doesn't really hurt my pockets.
Right.
But I can see how people would be upset because. There's just people making money off of artists, and how much money do the artists make? Like half a cent or something for it? How many spins you got to get?
Half a cent. You get.
It's not even less, that, is it?
No,
it's less than that, right?
A lot less.
It's
just
that behind. There's somebody's
people
getting
that
rich
get like
that
get like 11 million plays and then get like a $400 check. So
that's
it's much less than it.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. I just think that's ridiculous. I know it doesn't affect me, but
that's kind of my thing. Is I've never lived off of.
No.
The income of my songs. I've always had like a blue collar kind of music career where I've gone out and worked for money that I make. I mean, I had a record deal once where they gave me some money, but fuck, I was working my ass off that whole time.
Yeah. I've got a full-time job.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I say, it's just what they say, the principalities behind it, that someone's getting that rich off of people who are working that hard. Like I spent 2 years.
Do you think that's something because of our age? Because we come from a time when you wanted something, when you wanted an album when you were a kid, like when you heard Back in Black and you thought it was I'm Black. When you went out to buy that album, you had to get your, you know, $6.99 or $7.99 together.
Get your allowance money.
Yeah.
I mean,
is that something that, because that's what I'm finding doing this show is that people over a certain age that grew up as consumers after like 1998, they're like, they're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah,
like
the, Me, it's just like, I mean, it's that thing, free publicity and exposure, that word, it's exposure. Somebody in Europe can hear your music, but what does that do for me? I mean, I'm not playing a concert over there. I'd rather get that money. Why can't I get the money? I just don't understand that. It's like, And I think Jay-Z is trying to start something now. They're actually kind of revolting against
it. What's his thing called?
I think his thing, I forgot what it's called.
He's doing like a live concert on it, I saw.
Well, he's starting up a whole thing like Spotify.
Yeah.
Where the musicians buy in and then they get their money back, from what I understand. Which is a pretty cool concept, I mean.
Right.
But,
We could talk about this all day.
All day long.
All day long. And, but the one thing I'm going to say is that I don't think you can give people a thing and go like, hey, you can listen to all this music for $7.99 a month and like have unlimited access to everything.
Unlimited.
Or they're going to have to pay more. Like people are like, there's no way for Jay-Z to set up this thing and people buy into it and make their money back without the people, the consumers themselves paying more money, because that's just simply what it is. And if someone gave you a choice, if you weren't a musician and you were a kid that grew up now and they were like, hey, you can either buy into this Jay-Z thing, it's like $27.99 a month, or you can do $7.99 a month and be on Spotify.
See what I'm thinking?
I feel like people do that.
My thing is, the reason why I like Pandora, Pandora is like, they can listen one time, but if they want to listen again, like it keeps going. It's like, you can't rewind Pandora and just keep playing that song that you like so much. Pandora maybe sparks something. Like, let's say you have a channel, right? I've listened to Pandora before, and I go, man, what was that song? God, I love that song. Now I got to go find that song. I go find the song on iTunes, and maybe I like it enough, and then I buy it. Spotify, I've seen my girlfriend on Spotify. She likes a song. Let me rewind it. Why would you ever go buy it? Why would you ever buy it? Just keep playing it again. Keep playing it again. Keep playing it again until you're tired of it.
Right.
It's like, it's not... There's no reason to go out. I mean, no, people don't have to go look for songs anymore. And then there's another thing that's on YouTube that I learned about, is that people can play a video on YouTube, and then there's a site that will take the audio off of that video, and then you have the music for free.
Well, I mean, when I was a kid, I had a boombox that was had the radio on,
and there was a
cassette, and there was a play and record and pause pushed, and so like as soon as a jam came on, that I would be like, ah, it's my song. I'd run across the room and hit pause and record that song. That's the same thing.
It is the same thing, and we were wrong for that. back then.
Sure, but didn't you do that?
I never could figure out how to do that. I never had a jam box that could do that. Back then, I wasn't thinking like that. I was into the rap scene where you bought mixtapes and had records and all that stuff.
Let me ask you this. Do you treat your SoundCloud then kind of like a mixtape? Because I notice there's a lot of different stuff on there than...
SoundClouds are all demos. People can have them.
Essentially, that's like a mixtape for you.
Yeah, and
shit, I just throw it out there.
Yep, and it's whatever. Because I'm in a songwriting group that I write a song a week.
Yeah.
So whatever I put on there, if people want it, they can have it for free. Because in the end, it's not going to sound like that. If I go in to mix it or whatever, or do work it out with the band, it's probably not going to sound like it. Mainly, it's me playing all the instruments, so I'm not good enough to play it to put it on the very end of it. So it's just a demo, just to get my ideals out for once a month. Yeah. So when I tell people, hey, if you want it, you can go in there and have it. And it's like 19 songs on there.
Yeah,
and I just
I think that's cool.
Yeah, I think that.
I think that's cool because you're handling it in a way where you're like, "Hey, here's some stuff you can just have.
You can just have it."
And like, here's something I spent 2 years working on.
Please buy.
Fork over some dough.
Please. Ooh.
Whoa.
Thunder.
We're bringing the thunder in this conversation.
Oh yes.
Well, let's do it, man. Let's talk about Still Here. So you showed up here, and I was like, "So who did this record?" And then you started saying, "Well, yeah, I had to get I was gonna do a Kickstarter, and then." And then you decided to just buy some equipment.
Yeah, so I started off. I've mixed some albums in the past, but I didn't do it. I did it with computer speakers, a little bit of computer speakers, a good little bit of computer speakers, and Cakewalk. And so Denisha, have you ever talked to? You ever heard of Denisha Odigi?
No.
Denisha Odigi said one day, it's like, you need to get some studio monitors. And you need to get Pro Tools, and you need to step your game up if you're going to even think about doing any of this. So I just finished 5, and I wanted to put out, and I've been putting out some albums, and I go back and listen to them. They would just sound atrocious. I was like, they're just horrible. So I said, you know what I need to do? And I kind of put a feeler out to see. I'm thinking about doing another Kickstarter, see if I would get any kind of reaction. No reaction. Nobody said anything. There were no likes
on the
Oh,
thing.
You put it on
your Facebook just to see if I there were no likes, Johnny.
Well, no one actually likes a Kickstarter, I don't think.
I mean, there was no like, there were no comments, there were no likes, there was no interest. I said, you know what? I'm not gonna go down that road again. It's like, I'm not doing that. So what I started doing, I got this gig where I'm getting paid, a little restaurant gig, getting some money. There's that El Arroyo and Santi, what's that thing called? Santa Maria, Santa something. That Mexican place down.
I don't know, but restaurant. I'll tell you. In summer 11 years ago,
Santa Maria,
summer 2004. And the fall of 2004, that El Arroyo kept me alive, man.
I played the one in Round Rock.
Yeah.
Made a lot of money.
I was like on a El Arroyo tour. Yeah, I played the B Caves. I played that one on 183. Yeah. And then I played that one over here with the Great Songs.
Yeah, it was a cash cow, man.
Yeah.
It's cash
three shows, cow. Three shows a week.
Cash cow. I mean, and then so, I had some money from that. I just said, you know what? I'm going to break down. So I called Omar and said, hey, what do you suggest?
Omar Vallejo.
Omar Vallejo.
Brother of the best producer in town.
Yes, AJ brother of the best producer.
Owner of 512 Studios.
512 Studios.
Yeah.
And so he told me what to get. And I went and got Pro Tools. And Omar's so cool, man. He's like, here's what you get. Even, I mean, how many guys who produced your last album recorded has a studio? I mean, I just recorded a studio. I'm going to help you get something going. To take your business away from them and then help me any way he wants to. If I have a question, he would call. I mean, it's like, it was crazy.
You know, guys that are cool, dude.
Yeah, very cool. Amazing.
The other way of thinking I've never been able to understand. I've never been able to understand people cling. Like, if someone isn't coming to you to work with you, you being a dick to them is not going to make them want to work with you anymore.
You're
I mean,
right
that's just true. And guilt. Like, why would you make a record with it? Like, I want to make a record, man. I want to express my soul.
Yeah.
You're going to guilt me into doing it. That's crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
It was just too... So he's
a good guy, man. I mean, you know,
Omar's great, man. He's great. And so he told me, he's like, okay, this is what you need to do. And so what I did is like, okay, so I went and got that. I went and got Studio Drummer.
Who's
Studio Drummer is a program.
Okay.
So I got all those programs, got some keyboard programs. And all this stuff. So I started in on this project. And then so what I said, you know, I was like, you know what? But I still want some live drums. So Omar and them hooked me up with a deal. I went in there and recorded live drums, just the drums. And I recorded vocals. So I went in and got the vocals laid down and the drums laid down for the first set of songs. Okay. this is 2 years in the making. So I had, there's three songs that didn't make it that I went in and recorded. So I had to start over. So I did that. Got those kind of mixed. Live drums were much harder than studio drummer. You know, it's like the gate.
So what exactly? Studio drummer is already recorded drums.
Studio
and
drummer
then you program
samples.
It.
Yeah, and it's like a MIDI.
So those are some program.
Some of them are.
That feels.
Two
feels
of the songs
really
are
really good.
Two of the songs are. You've got to get a live, like Move On, Your Religion, and Genesis are live drums. The rest of the songs aren't.
Okay.
Studio drummer. So what I had to do is just kind of get a mix, get a feel for the... But studio drummer's real good. If you're going to be like a songwriter, you want to do some stuff, they've got it down to the point where they have room mics that you can manipulate at all.
Yeah.
So it's very... You can manipulate any way you want to. It takes a long time, but you can manipulate it.
You still, in those moments, you still need some real...
Oh, yeah.
Human being.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you do, you add, just the tricks,
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
add shakers
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
tambourines for stuff like that. So I did all that stuff.
Humanizes it.
Yeah. And I also had a guy in England lay down some keys and stuff like that. So,
really?
Yeah. So there's very few times I was in the same room with people I was working with, too.
Really?
So, yeah. So Alberto, who's on that that album, well, a new drummer is on a new bass player. Because our bass player, it took so long that our bass player ended up having to quit the band before the album was done.
Okay.
But he was never in the same room with me. So he has a little studio in his house.
Oh, so you just send him
Dropbox.
Tracks.
Yep. Dropbox with him. And then Elias came over and we did that. So once I got all that done, I had a rough draft, let's say. Right. And then the Mingo Fish Trap album came out. Right. And everything I had recorded up to that point, I hated it. So I said, this sucks. I listened to Roger's album, and I was like, man, what I'm doing sucks. So I pretty much begged Roger. I said, hey.
That's the guy from Mingo Fish Trap.
I said, hey, well, have a listen to this album. You know, tell me what you think. And Roger, and I knew, I like what I love about Roger, and there's certain people that I'll go to. I think when you're going to mix something or you're going to work on something that like that, you don't need yes people.
No.
You need people that are going to tell you, exactly. You know exactly, you know what I'm saying?
Of course, yeah, that's what I like.
So I knew Tom Meaney wasn't a yes person. Yeah. He'd tell me exactly, and I knew for sure Roger wasn't going to be. I thought, but here's how cool Roger Blevins is. I thought he would just tell me, hey, you know, this is this way.
Wait, Tom Meaney, the comedian?
No, Tom Meaney, the musician.
Oh, okay.
He's a singer-songwriter. And so
I was like, wait, you still need your records as a comedian?
No. And so what's so cool about Roger is that I told him, I was like, I sent him an email. I thought he was just going to email me back and say, oh, yeah, you know, you may want to do this, do that. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll come over and I'll show you. And I learned so much from that man that day. He came over to my house. He pretty much remixed one of my songs and was showing me this, showing me gates, showing me compression, not even just showing me, explaining compression to me, explaining how reverb works, how reverb makes distance and all this stuff. Explained all this stuff to me. And I took all these notes and I just scrapped everything I did and kind of made that the foundation.
Okay.
And I started mixing again. And I was even going to let another guy mix the album too. This guy, my friend Stephen Miller mix it. But I was like, you know, I don't have enough money to pay him either for that. It was going to be $100-something a track. I was like, I got to get back. I learned this from Roger. I'm going to take what Roger taught me. And I watched some more videos of David Pensado. And I was like, you know what? I don't have a clock. I'm just going to take my time. There's no rush. People have, you know, I don't think there's no interest for anybody to have an album. If there was an interest, there would have been a Kickstarter. Like, hurry up, come on. So there's nothing. It's not like I'm in big demand.
Yeah.
So I just took my time. And then that man, it took like me like a year. And I said, when I say a year, it's not me going in every day. You know, it's like me mixing a little bit here, doing a little bit of what he said, then walking away a couple of days. Come back, listen to it. That don't sound good. Do it again. And then what I had to do at the very end, there was sometimes like I didn't like a snare. So then I had to go learn how to do triggers. So I'd have to go watch a thing on triggers and how to do that. And then go buy Slate's drums, where it's a Slate thing where you have to learn how to do the trigger. And then I go online and learn that. Every time I want to get something like I wanted it, I'd have to hit a wall and I have to go learn how to do it. So I learned a lot on this album.
Yeah, you did. And you did a great job. I mean, people heard, you know, at the intro of this thing, and then now they're going to hear it coming out of it. They're going to hear a whole song at the end. I mean, you really did a great job,
Thank you. And Steven did a great job of mastering it. I use him on a mastering, and he did an amazing job. So I think I put my heart into this one. I mean,
yeah, you really did. I've done another one. The beautiful songs. And,
thank you. Hope people enjoy it. I mean,
yeah.
So
there's a song off my Deezy that has a lot of social media references. That as
you're gonna laugh at this.
Okay.
So like I said, I was in that songwriting group, right?
Right.
So we this songwriting group, we're gonna do 52 songs in 52 weeks.
Okay.
And if you quit, if you didn't make it, you were out the band. I mean, out the group. You know, you have to have.
I think
it by
I got
midnight.
Dismissed from the group because I didn't. I remember at first.
Yes. You didn't make it. You were in that group. You were in that group. You got cut because you didn't make it in.
Can I get back in?
Or it's a new
the
one.
Beginning of the year.
Yeah, we're done. But there's a new semester. We'll get you in the next semester.
Okay, I love it. And so semesters.
It was in the middle of it. We're right around song number 46. No, right around 36 or somewhere around there. And if you've ever been in a songwriting group,
yeah.
It starts wearing on you,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So you're like, man, I don't feel like doing this. So I was like, you know what? What I'm going to do is I'm just going to hit record. First, let me figure out the chords right quick. Okay, these are the chords I'm going to use. This is the melody I'm going to use.
Right.
I'm going to hit record, and whatever comes out of my mouth,
right, that's
I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, because it's almost midnight on Sunday. It's like 10:53.
That's the song.
Yeah.
I didn't change anything. I changed one word. I changed awkward. Awkward to argue. Facebook makes us want to argue instead of Facebook makes us awkward.
Right.
That's the only thing I changed. And I was like, I said, you know what? I'm going to get instead of me singing it, I'm going to get my violinist to sing because I love her voice.
Yeah.
She's got the innocent kind of voice,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So got her singing. And
did you sing all those harmonies and stuff? Like
boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Man, that song.
How long does that take you? When you're there by yourself,
takes a while.
No, I'm joking.
No, it takes a while. It takes a while because, it takes a minute. Because I sing it how you probably shouldn't be singing it. I'm sitting in my chair.
Yeah.
With the mic in front of me and all that stuff in front of me, and I'm working the thing like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it takes a second. I mean, plus, Owen and Omar let me borrow one of his mics.
That's always helpful. Mics are really
important.
So, yeah.
He let me borrow, like, I don't even know what mic it is, but it's the one that's in a wooden crate kind of thing. It's in like a wooden box. It was nice. So I was like, I rented, you know,
some outboard gear, a compressor.
The what do you call it? That preamp?
Like this kind of stuff. Yeah. Like the preamp, up at top, I've got a preamp and I've got a compressor up there.
It was a little smaller one. It's like a little preamp thing, and I borrowed that and
right.
And yeah, it's actually pretty good. You know what's funny is I to warm up for this album, I made another album called "It Takes a Village to Raise a It Takes a Village to Make a Record," but I had the worst idea I've ever had in my life as far as marketing. Instead of making CDs, I made download stickers. And don't ever do that, Johnny.
Stickers, like not cards, but
it's a sticker. It looks like an album, but it's a sticker, and it peels off, uh-huh. and it tells you when people download the album. Like when people go to download it, I think I've sold over 150 of those stickers, and I've gotten an email probably about 15 emails. I mean, no matter how much I explain it.
So where is that album now? Is it on the SoundCloud?
It's on SoundCloud. It's on CD Baby. It's on, what you call it? It's a duet album with Susanna Schoffel.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people. So I kind of learned.
Candace is on there too.
Huh?
Right? Candace on there?
Yep, Candace on there. Yeah. So that was my warm up to doing this album. It's like, I'm going to learn. And as I learn, I'm going to learn with these ladies here. And so I did that in between it. So I kind of walked away from that and did that.
Huh.
And I finished that, but it was a download sticker. So, yeah, it's what were we saying before?
We were talking about songwriting in the songwriting game.
Oh yeah. So that's how I figured. And that song right there that's studio drummer. The drums are studio drums. So you have to.
You did a great job programming stuff, man.
Thank
you really
you, man.
Did. You did a really great job.
Thank you.
I mean, I thought somebody else did it.
Oh, cool. That makes feel
so
good.
You're professional.
Good. Well, I hope so.
By now, right?
I just need to get paid, huh?
It's hard, man. I mean, it's tough. It's tough when you go to put out a record now because there's not this sort of dream of something going awry.
No.
But the thing that I think is so great is that nothing, there's no, like, you're still doing it.
Oh,
and
that's why. Yeah.
There's nothing fake about what you're doing, and you're not doing anything to sell anything. You're just making, you're learning how to record. You're making the best record you can. You put it out.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, it keeps me sane. It really keeps me sane. I mean, that's like, I can't imagine going through life and not having something to hold on to, something to make you drive you. You know, some people, I know some people that, I'm not going to call their name, but I know some people that just like, I'm just miserable because they just go to work. They come home, they wake up, they go back to work, they come home, and it's the same routine. I think being creative, whether it's art or music or whatever, something about being creative just gives you a little something, you know what I'm saying? A way to express yourself.
Right. And you know what? It's always hard for me to hang out. I don't think I really know anybody that doesn't have like some kind of dream. And it's not like, Ray wants to win a Grammy for Still Here this year. They're like realistic dreams. I want to make this record on my own. I'm going to put it out. I'm going to try and fill up fucking Strange Brew.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then I'm going to take it from there the next day.
Yep.
But that's a dream. I mean, you've put so much effort into it.
Yep. Dream and a goal, just a, like mini goals, you know, and like, that was my first thing. My first thing on this record was just really to get it finished. Because I was like, I'm never going to finish this. I've never worked on an album for 2 years. Like people was like, oh, you put out a CD every 2 CDs a year. Yeah, but that was just me. I was mixing on studio monitors. Not studio, but computer monitors.
Yeah.
And just playing around and just with drum loops that I got off of freelupermans.com.
But you were learning.
Yeah.
And you were expressing yourself and you know, putting out music.
I wish I could bring those things back though. Now it's like wish I could just fish them in, reel them. Like how does Bluebell do it? Can I have a recall on those? Oh, I went and listened to it the other day. Like I had a thing on Bandcamp, and I was like, oh, this is horrible. Why did it? And then I started thinking, am I going to think this in 5 more years when I keep mixing and keep doing this?
Yeah,
when I
learn more and more. And then the worst part about it is somebody at your show is going to be like, God, we should go back to that. You know, the way stuff sounded on 5.
I know, right?
Or not 5, but the album before. On the
Beautiful Mistakes.
Yeah, Beautiful Mistakes.
Yeah, I was like, no way, man. There's no way. That's why I redid, Religion, Genesis, and Move On are all songs that were on recordings that I did before.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to add 4 new ones. Like that last one is a collaboration I did with Steven. Which he's a badass mixer too. I was like, me and him were towards the end of our 52-week song thing. We started working together, and we wanted to do some pop songs. You know, we like writing for other people. It's like I like this pop thing. I was like, I can get into this, and so we decided that last song on the CD is me and his collaboration. As far as like, and I was like, okay,
Your Religion.
No, it's called I Feel Alive.
Oh, I Feel Alive. Sorry.
Yeah. So he did the mixing. He did the programming on that one, and I did the melody and I think some of the bass. I might lay down some bass. Oh, yeah. And I went out and bought a bass, too. Man, I bought some. There's so much money I spent on this album. Now I think about it.
But the cool thing is you didn't spend money on one album. You spent money on your future.
Yes.
It was like teaching a man to fish.
Exactly. That's exactly how I approached it. That's exactly what I thought about when I was telling
you
baby
didn't go
C.
to Joe's Crab Shack down here.
No,
you went and learned how to fish.
No, when I spent that money on that Pro Tools, that's what I kept telling myself. And the plugins and plugins are just like I used to think going into what's it called, Guitar Center.
Yeah,
you know, you try to avoid going to Guitar Center.
Yeah,
now you're on your computer and you see all these plugins that you're just like, oh my God, I need that. And then Wave sends you a sale. The black cell that they would have, I bought those 2 cells, that first Thanksgiving and the second Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. I bought most of my stuff. They had like $39 this or $19 for this limited time, the black cell. And I was like, oh, I just ate it up, man. I bought all these plugins. I don't even, then turned around and I ended up maybe using 5 of them.
You said it was a black sale at first. Honestly, I was like, no, they didn't tell me about it. It's like some Cuban dude. They're like, you're not allowed here. It's this black dude shopping there.
No, that sale after Thanksgiving, I guess it's called Black Friday sale.
Yeah, Black Friday.
Yeah, I ate that up, man. That's why I got all my... And I don't even use half the plugins that I got now. I'm just a studio drummer, lay down with my bass. And, I actually did buy this new...
What do you use for keyboards? Like a controller?
A MIDI.
Okay.
Yeah. But I usually, a lot of times, I'll use that guy in England, you know.
Yeah, tell me about this guy. What's going
that's
on there?
That's my man, James Clark. that's my man. He's James Clark. I love my keyboardist. I wish I could have him.
Who is he? Is he like a session guy?
James Clark. No, you know what?
He's James Clark.
James Clark.
Keyboardist.
He lives in England. Okay, so this is how he found me. He listened to the first recording I did with this new band, after I broke up with Prim. When we had 3 mics on the drum, it's called This Ain't Rocket Science. It's more like a live album.
Okay.
And he found me on Reverb Nation like 8 years ago and was like, hey, you know, man, I love this album, all this stuff. I said, thanks, man. And so it just kind of evolved when I started getting, you know, started getting his Pro Tools and telling him. And then we emailed back and forth. He said, well, I have a little recording at the thing. And he's, you know, he told me, he's the one that kind of taught me that if you put it on Dropbox or whatever, I can listen to it and I can record on top of it and send it back to you. And I was like, really? You can do that? It's like, yeah. We started doing that, man. That guy is, I'm trying to tell you right now, this guy is genius. I have never, everything he sends me, it's just marvelous. Like, it's just absolutely marvelous. I use him on a lot of demos. And I would use my keyboard player, but she doesn't have the same kind of recording stuff. And she lives in San Antonio. So it's just easier to have him do stuff for me, you know, and whatnot. And then
she's cool. She don't care.
No, she. I mean, because it doesn't. It's demos. Like a lot of that stuff is demos. And then when it comes down to it, I'll let her hear it, you know, and check it out. And then I was like, you know, what do you think about this? And she'll use what she uses, and then she'll take what she takes. You know, it's the same thing. The one I feel bad about is my drummer, because I can never record him. So everything, every song I've since for the last 4 years starts off with some sort of drum he's got to learn, you know, and then make it his own.
Yeah.
So we only practice like once a month, so it's hard to get together. So
is this band going to be playing on the 16th?
Yes, full band. We're going to have the Bruno Horns even guest spot with us. It's going to be a big thing. I'm a 7-piece band, and then
Okay, so wait. So you on guitar and
it's me on and guitar. We got Creole, Young Money, Alize, Pretty Toe, Renee, the Ghost, Franklin on violin. We got Muggsy Bogues, aka Strawberry Shortcake, on bass. We got Jay RZA on the drums. We got Mexican Chocolate on backing vocals. We got Tangeray on keys, and we got Grape Ape Stevens on violins. So I got two violins, drums, bass, keys. And then the Bruno Horns.
All right.
You know the Bruno Horns? Well, they're probably going to want me to say their real names, but I'm not going to say it. I'm going to keep it real. We got Damon Sweet Lips, Big Booty Garcia. We got Megan Booten. And we got Doc Kelsey on trumpet. So it's pretty cool, man. Like, Love Don't Come Easy. Yeah, they're the ones playing on that.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. They came in and did some horns for me. They also did it on, I think, is that the only track I got horns on? I think so. They did it. They were also on 5. They came in and did, what did they do on 5? Man, I'm losing my mind. Oh yeah, they did, but it wasn't the same Bruno Horn lineup. They had a different, they recently changed then. So yeah, they're going to sit in with us. They're going to sit in and about 3 or 4 songs, Stars, and another song if on another album that never really saw the light of day.
Well, that's good, though. I mean, it's good that you got an outlet, you know?
Yeah.
You got songs for days now.
Hey, once a week, man. Once a week. I'm still in
it. It's not going to be that hard. Now, the next record, you're not going to take 2 years to make. You're going to have the songs, and you're going to have the knowledge of the equipment. You're going to sit down with your...
I hope it doesn't, because, see, the thing is, with me...
It doesn't.
It's like, to make the demos, you put them together real fast. It's like, you don't... And not that you don't care, but she's like, okay, I'll do this. I'll put this right there. I'm not really going into, I'm not doing the car listening thing. I'm not doing the double checking. I'm literally going real quick, doing a preset mix, a preset preset EQ of everything. I'm not really thinking about all of that. I'm not really making sure, hey, this is this frequency messing with this frequency. It's just out there real quick, just so they can hear it. When I do with the album, that's more detailed. Like I can listen to the drums and the bass for 3 days. You know, that's just me just getting.
But you'll move faster.
I hope so.
Not everybody listens to bass and drums for 2 days. I mean, eventually it just starts driving you nuts.
I hope.
Like, how else am I going to make this sound?
Hey, Baby C was.
I'm sure.
She was out driving.
Baby C was probably ready to get married.
I was driving her crazy. Especially on Find a Suit. Find a Suit to get the bass to sit with the drums.
Yeah.
It took me forever. It took me forever to figure that out, man. It's like. It was just like, it was either too boomy or it was either that. Then I walk away. Then I try this compression. That compression didn't work. Then I go online and say, trouble bassing. And then I went to another Dave Pisano's thing. And it's like, it kept going. And I finally just said, you know what? Forget this. And I asked Elias, like, how do you like your bass to sound? What do you do? Once he told me what he does with his bass sound on live stage, I kind of tried to do it on the studio. And it
There's worked. A piece of blue tape on that speaker. What does it say? Some kind of frequency up 1 dB.
Bass 1.
That's what I'm supposed to do with bass.
Oh, that's what you do. Yeah. I wish it was like
my reminder.
Presets would like what makes me mad, and I don't understand why it doesn't work. Because the logic in me said, why doesn't this work? I recorded everything the same way. Why can't I just have the same EQ
everything
on everything?
Because you can't.
It's just crazy.
Okay, now look. Hopefully there's people out there that were thinking about making a record and playing all this stuff themselves. Maybe they'll still want to do it, because ultimately the outcome, you're very happy and very proud.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's... And now you're empowered. That's your record. This record, like, not that you haven't put your name or whatever behind it, whatever. This is something you can be like, hey, man, this is...
Oh,
like,
yeah. I'm proud of
this. This is Ray Prim, the producer and engineer and songwriter. I am. And, you know.
I think if it came easy, then it wouldn't feel... I mean, it wouldn't feel as good, you know. When I was finally done, and I knew that all the work that I did to do it, you know, it's just hoping that it's like, okay, I hope people appreciate it, I hope people like it. You got that? It's that fear, because You can't hide behind nothing. This isn't, it ain't like, okay, Omar makes this album. You know, I can say, oh, you know what?
Yeah.
You know, such and such. Oh, well, that producer, he did something that I didn't want to do. No.
Yeah.
I did it all. You know what I'm saying? I did.
I love it. There's a heavy gospel and R&B vibe. There's a, you really have a very Al Green sort of.
Oh, thank you.
Voice that's so, I don't know, it's great.
Bill
it's
Withers beautiful. is my man.
Is your man?
Yeah, that's who I like. I try to keep it simple like him. Yeah, I love the way his songs are simple, but yet they capture the emotion. I go for the emotion, and I don't really try to break the mold when it comes to, like, as far as arrangements and stuff like that. I just want to capture the emotion, have good lyrics, and a good a catchy melody. And sometimes I try to hide what I'm really trying to say behind certain. Like, Find a Suit, it has two things. It's an actual suit, and it's a suitor. It's about a friend of mine who didn't really want to get married, but his girl wants him to get married. And it's kind of the pressures of that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I wanted to do, like, Find a Suit and Find a Suitor.
Yeah.
And saying it's time to do it. So that's pretty much what I'm trying to do with all that stuff, man. And I'm happy that it's done. I'm happy that I got it.
Relieved.
Oh, that's the word. That's the word. Matter of fact, I told Tom, because he's starting up that new songwriter group. I was like, man, I'm not ready to start up another songwriting group. It's like, I don't want to start up another songwriting group. I just want to take a break. It's like, I don't want to write.
It's like,
I don't
want
to mix.
You think, yeah.
Yeah, and then he talked me into it. And I've got like 3 songs that I'm probably going to show the band. Because that's what I'm scared of. And that's another reason why I had to get out of the band, because I was like, Off My DZ wasn't going to even be on the album. But I'm writing these songs once a week. And the songs that I recorded, it's taking so long. Oh, I don't like that song anymore. But this new, everything's great when it's new.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, man, I got this great new song.
Yeah.
Let me trash this. I said, you know what? If I don't stop writing songs, this is not going to work. I'm never going to get done with this album.
Yeah.
So I had to shut it down, man.
Who else is on the bill on the 16th?
Amy Cook.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Amy Cook is playing early slot.
She's played drums with me.
Amy Cook plays drums?
Yeah, she did the other night on my song.
Wow.
At the Cactus.
Wow.
There's a picture of it on Facebook.
It is?
Yeah, she cut her hair real short, so she doesn't look like her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she's starting the night off early, and then we play after her, and then what's cool is he gives us the night. So, I mean, we got like 7-piece. After you set everything up, and we can play for 2 hours, you know. So, I don't know who plays before Amy, but I know it's us and Amy.
So well, that's great. Fun time. Yeah. That's fantastic. I'm a huge Amy Cook fan. I was just actually I wrote a song with Kimmy Rhodes and Gabe Rhodes today.
Yeah, I was trying to get her into that Soul Riders in the Round for the longest, but her schedule kept taking her out of town.
Yeah.
And I never got a chance to do it.
Yeah, she's fantastic. So, I read some stuff. You're active on social media. People can go to rayprim.com. There they can find you on the SoundCloud, on the Bandcamp, on the Instagram, on the Twitter, on the Facebook. Do you find sometimes that that's overwhelming? There's a lot of that stuff you got to do.
I know. You know what? I don't really think about it. The only one I really focus on, like the Twitter thing, I get tweets. Only time I'm on Twitter is because either Facebook sends it out for me or my Reverb Nation sends it out for me. I don't even open up Twitter. Like a lot of these things, you don't even have to open them up. You have one central, like Reverb Nation will do all that stuff for you. It'll post my shows for me on my Facebook thing. It'll do all that stuff for you. So I don't really, I'm only one central. I'm really on one central, 2 central things. Reverb Nation and Facebook. Yeah. The rest of it, it'll post. I don't even know how to do Twitter. I can't even read Twitter. I don't even know what they're saying on that stuff. It's just all that shorthand.
That's my favorite.
I can't understand it. It's just like Chinese to me. All that ats and deaths and pounds and there's no complete sentences, and I don't know what they're saying.
Well, you got to alter the way you speak when you got 140 characters.
Yeah. I have no idea what people are saying.
But I noticed that you wrote something about this fight, the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight. What happened? Like, I woke up the next morning, and social media was flooded with just judgment. People were mad. It was like, this fight of the century, fight of my ass. That guy, how did he win? And what, you wrote something like, hey, come on, get it together.
Oh, because, okay, so people wanted to see a fight, right? And I think this whole MMA thing where people just, ooh, we're going to stand in front of each other and just beat each other to death and stuff like that, right?
Oh, mixed martial arts.
Yeah, mixed martial arts. Yeah. We're going to beat each other to death. And that's not how Mayweather fights. Mayweather has never fought. This is his 48th fight What makes people think that he's going to fight a different way?
Yeah.
After 47, he's a defensive fighter. He's a get points kind of fighter. And that's what he does. And I like the science. I like the science of hitting without getting hit.
Yeah.
Like, and they thought, like, well, no, he should have stayed there and went toe-to-toe with Pacquiao. And man, if he went toe-to-toe with Pacquiao, Pacquiao would have killed him. There's no sense in that. That makes no sense to me. Why are you bitching? You know, people can't fight the way you want them to fight. I think people always want people to do things that they want done.
And it went the whole length of the fight, and then the judgment went to Mayweather.
Oh, yeah. Because Mayweather beat him. I mean, Pacquiao was hitting air. I mean, in the Kaku box thing where they count box hitting, how many times you connect, it was 148 for Mayweather and 81 for Pacquiao.
Yeah.
So you really can't. What are we talking about?
Are you a boxing fan?
Yes.
Are you a sports fan?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm a football. Football
guy. You're not a baseball guy?
No. I played football in high school, so I'm a big, big, big football. I'm a Washington Redskins.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't want to say that out loud.
No, that's all right. No, I mean, you're in this town that doesn't have professional sports, so who cares?
And Florida State.
Seminoles. Oh, well, come on.
Yeah, I'm a big Florida
FSU?
State. Yep. Because when I was in high school, I wanted to be like Deion Sanders.
Oh, yeah, he went there.
Yeah, he was a defensive
back. I lived in Miami and got to be at I mean, I was there like in 83 when they won.
Oh, you were?
In 84. And then.
Did you go to a game?
Oh, I went to a lot of games. Oh, yeah, I went to a championship game.
Are you
serious?
The
first one, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah,
is
it was
that with
pretty
Charlie
awesome.
Ward?
My. I don't think so.
Charlie.
No. It was the one when Schnellenberger was still the coach.
Oh, you're talking about Miami?
Miami. Miami.
I don't like Miami.
Yeah, my stepmom, my dad married a lady that was an Orange Bowl queen in like 1971. But the Orange Bowl, we always got tickets and stuff, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was not a Miami fan.
Wide well, right, of course wide not left. Not wide if you right. were into FSU.
Yeah, wide right, wide left, wide right, wide left. Every year.
So a big show. This is a record release party. You got the CDs already? Coming out.
Well, Scott's in charge of that. He made me nervous the other day. He made me so nervous, man. I'm gonna lie. Oh my god, my heart nearly stopped. He called, so I'd made all the stuff and put it on the Dropbox. And I'm real meticulous about what I do. You know, I had it all laid out and gave it to him. I said, okay, is anything else you need? Just let me know. Just let me know, Scott. And I don't want to bug him because, you know, I don't want to bug him because he's doing this for me. So I would, like a week later, hey, I noticed you didn't join the Dropbox folder. Did you get a chance to look at it? Everything good? Yeah, we're good. So he hits me up last week on a Monday. It's like, oh, so check this out. The CD thing, the DVD, the DDP, it's not working, which the DDP image where it has everything in it.
Right.
The whole album, right? He's like, that's not working. I need you to send me the WAV files. I didn't have the WAV files. And he said something about the artwork. The artwork's not working. And, you know, we got to change the artwork. And I was just like, he's like, and we need to get this done by today. And I'm at work. So I was like, oh, I'm so nervous. I was like, man, my blood pressure went up. I was like, oh, I'm so scared. I was like, okay. So I went to my supervisor. I was like, listen. I gotta leave. I left work. I gotta leave. I gotta go home and figure this out. I gotta redo the back cover because I didn't. I also did the. This is how much I did it on my own. I also went and did. I did all the artwork for the CDT.
That's good.
So I was like, because I had to learn. That's like. So I went and bought Adobe Photoshop, took lessons and all that stuff too. So,
Jesus.
Yeah, so I wasn't playing around. So I went, but I don't know what I'm doing, especially with Adobe Photoshop. So I went back home, and I had flattened the image. So when you flatten the image, it's not like Pro Tools, there's no backups.
Right.
So I was talking to the guy who laid it out for me. He's like, oh, no, you can't fix that. You have to redo it. It's like, oh, my God. So I went back.
So there's no way to save the layers?
No. Once you flatten it, it's done.
Okay.
It doesn't make sense, does it? Like in Pro Tools, you can go back and there's backup sessions.
Yeah.
So I was looking for backup sessions and I called the guy. I was like, where's my backup session for this Pro Tools? He's like, well, did you flatten it? And I was like, yeah.
Oh, dude.
I flattened it to send it out, right? Yeah, and I didn't save it like that. So I guess for everybody, if you're going to work in Adobe Photoshop, do a session where you save with the layers and then save with the flattened thing. If you're
but
do
once
it.
Again, will you please tell anybody out there that is wanting to make their own album and put it out?
It's a joy.
It's a great reward.
It's a great reward.
You have an album.
Yeah. I don't mean to make it sound like it's so stressful. I did have fun making it, and it's empowering that you're doing it yourself. But yeah, I was nervous. So I finally got it. I redid it and got it to him. And thank the Lord he got the DDP image working, because I don't know what I would have done. Because That would have been, man, that would have been hectic. Because we didn't have, there's like three different ways when I gave him the mastering, three different versions of how we wanted it out. Like one with the djembe in the beginning, right in the beginning. One with me starting right away. One with the djembe out in the middle. So I didn't know which one I'd finally gone with, because my mind was all clouded. So I was finally telling Steven, I was like, man, just listen to it, and you send the one that you think is the best.
I've gotten like that.
You know, just send it to me. But then he called me. He's like, oh, we got the thing working. So we're good on that front.
If this makes you feel good at all, there was a point at the end of the filming of Jaws, and you know, like, that was just a disastrous.
Oh, Jaws was?
Filming, yeah. Just awful. The shark didn't work most of the time. And
I didn't know that.
They started sending people out from Universal to the East Coast where they were filming it to, you know, get in Spielberg shit. And Spielberg is going insane. And so there was a shot. I don't know. There's a shot, the last shot they were going to shoot or whatever.
When it comes up on the boat?
No, but whatever in the sequence.
Oh, they go out.
And I saw this on a documentary. Richard Dreyfuss said he got on the plane, and Steven Spielberg came and sat next to him. He's like, what are you doing here? He said he looked completely insane. He was like, I left. I just left.
He just walked out on it?
Yeah, at the very end. He was just like, "I." That's what, you know. Finally, like, there's one thing. Like, I've done this whole fucking thing, dude. You decide where the djembe goes in the song, okay? Because I can't anymore. I've made all the decisions. The DDP is somewhere. I've got Scott. But I think that's fantastic that they started a label, because that place is all about music.
Yeah.
About music.
Him and Scott and Greg Ware have showed me so much love.
Greg Ware, great guy. Yeah.
They've showed me so much love, and I appreciate it.
I wonder if they're friends.
They are friends. I've seen Scott be at his place watching music, and I've seen vice versa.
Good.
Yeah, so, you know, it's good that they're friends and whatnot. We tried to talk Scott into coming over the other day and take his money. We were playing poker. Do you play poker?
Nope.
Okay. Well, we tried to get musicians.
I answered pretty fast, didn't I?
Yeah. We tried to get musicians together and play poker, and we tried to get him to come over.
Who's all in there? Any famous guys?
Tom Meany, 80. You know 80 Hernandez? Uh-huh. Me and him won last time. Some guys from his band. Greg Ware. Greg was there last time we played.
I think I do this. This is my poker. It's like a one-on-one.
One-on-one?
Like the, you know, the hour, a couple hours you spend with a friend.
You don't have to worry about losing your money.
Well, I do.
I lost my money on Saturday night.
That's terrible. Yeah. So, hey, well, let's talk about this Saturday, May 16th, 9 p.m., record release party for your album, Still Here, that you've worked so hard on for 2 years.
Yes.
At Strange Brew Lounge Side. If you do not live in Austin, you're listening to this, go to rayprim.com.
Rayprim.com.
That's 1M.
One M, please. Yeah. One M. One M.
Is there anything that I'm missing? Is there? Oh, also, you can see Ray on
the
cooking and drinking
the pizza eggs.
Yeah, with Johnny and AJ. He was our guest, and he brought us the great recipe pizza eggs.
You know, can I say something?
Yeah.
I put that. Okay, so you do your newsletter.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I don't get anything back from people saying anything from my newsletters. You know. Nothing.
It's like the Kickstarter.
Yeah. So that's the most response I've gotten
from
sending out an email. Like, what is this?
Yeah.
I never thought about that. Pizza eggs and all this stuff. I love that show. So did y'all get any new subscribers? Because the people are like, oh, I got to watch it. That's so funny.
I got to be honest. I didn't look at the numbers. No, I should.
I'm telling you, that's the most I've ever gotten back. It kind of felt good, because I'm thinking, sometimes you think, are people really even opening these emails? They don't even know what they're looking at it, because...
Well, people can join your email list. In fact, it's you refer to it as a cult.
Yes,
the cult. On your website.
The cult.
Yeah, and you've got
dates. Because it's such a small group.
Yeah. Well, look, there's going to be more. This album's great.
Thank you.
I, you know, people will play it. I hope that that like they play it at least on like KUTX and stuff like that.
I got to get on that next.
Yeah.
I've already got with Laura Slow, and I got it up at that radio station. She's got a Find the Suit is like the single. But I don't know. I don't know. You know a connection at KUT?
Yeah.
Oh, then let me get that from you.
I've had like everyone from there on this show.
Okay. Please help me out. Help
yeah.
brother out.
Yeah, I've got friends. You know Elizabeth McQueen?
No.
We'll talk about this off
here. Okay.
That was cocky, though, the way I said it. I know it. I know everyone because I love that group of people.
Yeah.
I love what they do, and I love the music that they play.
Yeah.
And I've known a lot of them for a long time, and I think they're fucking brilliant. And that station, you know, in a time when radio isn't playing you stuff where you're like, what is that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of that. There's a lot of formatted stuff. It's overly formatted, and you know.
Yeah.
You get to hear a lot of new stuff on there.
I like to listen on Tuesday nights with Dolores because she plays local stuff.
Yeah.
I like to check out that people's recordings and stuff and hear how it sounds.
Yeah.
Or the radio, so. But I haven't listened to, like, real radio besides sports radio in a long time because my radio at work won't catch. I'll only catch one station.
104.9.
1300 The Zone.
Oh, 1300 The Zone. That's a great station.
Yeah. That's it.
Well, thank you, Ray, for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Everyone, get out there this Saturday, May 16th, 9 p.m. Your album, Still Here, will be available at Strange Brew Lounge Side. If you are not there, you can go. You can find it on Bandcamp if you need to.
Yes.
And rayprim.com is the central location to find all things Ray Prim.
And I might take it up to Waterloo.
Yeah.
Have a stab at. They called me the other day. I had five up there. I think I put 10 of the albums.
They ever call you and ask you to come get your albums? Because they've done that to me once.
Oh, yeah. I came in. That's what I'm saying. I sold two of them. The 10 I put up there.
All right. Let's not depress everyone.
I went aluminum.
Everyone get out there and pick up this album. It's a great, great effort. Beautiful songs.
Thank you.
Very soulful record. A lot of gospel feeling backing vocals.
Thank you.
And the great Ray Prim writing beautiful songs.
Thank you, Johnny.
All right, man.
Oh, yes.
Ray Prim, great conversation with him. Get out there Saturday night, May 16th, if you are in Austin. Saturday, May 16th at Strange Brew Lounge Side, where he will be having a release party for his new album, Still Here. You can find out all about that album at rayprim.com. You can pick it up there, find out where to pick it up, or you can pick it up at the show. Don't forget that when you're out there on the internet searching out Ray Prim stuff, you can always go to Facebook, like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and get on us on Stitcher. Did that sound really official? Well, I hope you guys are all having a great week. Don't forget we have Danny Malone here on Friday. Great conversation with that guy. His album Speed Dreamer is out, done all on 4-track cassette. Blew my mind. So I guess this week is kind of themed, dudes that made their own records on their own. All right? Get out there and pick up Still Here, a fantastic album on Loungeside Records. And his Ray's release party is this Saturday, May 16th at 9 p.m. at Strange Brew Loungeside. Get out there and support Ray. All right, let's hear some more music from his album Still Here. Everyone have a great week. Let's get down.
In the beginning, see, we were just good friends. Girl, it was all in the sand. Know how it is when you're flirting. Yeah, until one day, feelings come creeping in. And it was easier, yeah. The beginning, see, we were comfortable. Man, it was so easy then. Just to be ourselves, neither one of us were walking around on eggshells. But emotions can change all that. From the beginning, yeah. See, we were crazy to think we never changed. Yeah, from the beginning. Oh, we should have known that nothing ever stays the same. Everything that you said back then. makes more sense now. Oh, everything that you said back then makes more sense now.